Welcome to The Rabbi and the CEO, separating fact from fiction and Bubba Mises from the bottom line. With your hosts, Rabbi David Vigler of Habata Palm Beach Gardens and CEO Mitch Zachary of Zachary Financial Consultants. Join the conversation through email, rabbi@jewishgardens.com. Watch the show on Facebook Live, facebook.com/gardensrabbi. Now here are your hosts, Rabbi David Vigler and CEO Mitch Zachary.
Separating the facts from the fiction and the Bubba Mises from the bottom line. Good morning and welcome to the Schmooze with the Rabbi and the CEO. Mitch Zachary is the CEO of Zachary Financial Consultants. I'm Rabbi David Vigler of Habata Palm Beach Gardens, where you'll find traditional Jewish values for contemporary Jews just like you. Learn about us online at www.jewishgardens.com. That's www.jewishgardens.com. Now, friends, let me tell you this, that at the Chabad of Palm Beach Gardens or any Chabad in the world, we are all about education. We're about teaching people. The question is, what are we teaching people? A lot of people are intrigued and excited to learn about something called the Kabbalah. Chabad is actually not a denomination of Judaism. It is not a form of Judaism. It is a philosophy which teaches Kabbalah to the layman. In order to discuss this very exciting and fundamental conversation, we have with us this morning, live in the studio, a Kabbalah teacher from the city of Kabbalah, the city of Tzfat, in the north of Israel. Good morning, Rabbi Eyal Reis from the Tzfat Kabbalah Center.
Good morning, Rabbi Vigler. It's great being here.
It's a pleasure and an honor, a privilege to have a Kabbalah teacher from Tzfat right here with us in the studio. Rabbi Reis, tell us, what is the Tzfat Kabbalah Center?
Tzfat Kabbalah Center is an educational spiritual center that works mainly on the platform of tourism. We host at our center an average of 30,000 visitors every year who participate to take part in various programs that last between a week to, I mean, that's the longest, like a week or sometimes even 8 days, and the shortest is like an hour. People come to Tzfat to immerse themselves.
So you can come to Tzfat for an immersive 1 hour Kabbalah seminar or a week long Kabbalah seminar. This is very exciting. Are these all Jewish people that are coming?
No, not just. To our center, I'd say it's an average, let's say like 75-80% Jews, and the rest are not Jewish. Crowd that comes from, again, all over the world. We work in Spanish, English, Russian, German,
amazing,
Dutch.
So we here on Shmooze Radio are reaching all sorts of people, many of whom have no relationship with a rabbi or a rebbetzin, certainly no synagogue affiliation, and they listen to us on Sunday mornings here on Shmooze Radio. This is their only Jewish connection. They maybe have heard a little bit about Kabbalah in the newspapers and the media, maybe through Madonna. Can you tell us, our listeners, Rabbi Reis, what is Kabbalah?
Kabbalah is part of the oral Torah received at Mount Sinai 3,330 years ago, exactly.
Whoa. Slow down. Kabbalah is part of the oral Torah.
Oral tradition, oral Torah received at Mount Sinai, yes.
3,330
years ago.
3,330 years ago and counting. So somebody heard this on Mount Sinai. Who was that?
No, what we all heard at Mount Sinai, actually millions of people were there, we heard the Ten Commandments. Afterwards, for 40 days, as we know, Moses went to the mountain, and hearing directly from God.
Right, so we all know that Moses was on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights, but we also know that he only brought down the Ten Commandments. So for heaven's sake, pardon the pun, what was he doing there for 40 days and 40 nights?
He actually learned all of the written Torah, which is later and was known as the five books of Moses, from Genesis to Deuteronomy. Alongside with it came an oral Torah, which explains the written text, and that he taught over 40 years to all the Israelites.
You know, I've heard a great story from a Kabbalist of Tzfat. The most famous Kabbalist ever to live in Tzfat was the Arizal. He lived there for only 2 years, in the 1500s?
In the 1500s, yes. And he completely revolutionized our understanding of the Kabbalah.
But hold on a second. I'm trying to share with you a quick story about the Arizal, which relates to Moses on Mount Sinai. One time, it was a Shabbat afternoon, and the Arizal, who literally revolutionized the Kabbalah, I'm going to ask you if you agree with my point here, that he was the one who really made the Kabbalah from accessible to most people. Until that point, nobody was able to access it. He was the one who said, "Mitzvah legalot zot ha-chokhmah." It is a mitzvah from now on to publicize the wisdom, this wisdom, which until this point was a secret. We're going to talk about why it was a secret, why the Kabbalah was such a secret until 500 years ago. But when he did this, and one time on a Shabbat afternoon, he fell asleep, took a nap. And when he woke up, he told his students that if I was to tell you what I witnessed in the past hour or so while I was sleeping, the visions that I saw, it would take me over 80 years of speech. Which means, obviously, that a person, it takes a lot longer to write something than it is to describe something. It takes a lot longer to describe something than it does to see something. Seeing, you can see 1,000 details. A picture is 1,000 words, right? When you see a vision, when you see a movie, it could take you 1 hour to see the movie, but it could take you a book, an entire book, to describe the story. So when Moses was on Mount Sinai, the visions of godliness, the secrets of the universe that he was exposed to on the mountain, is what became encapsulated in the pages of what is called the books of Kabbalah. How's that for a description, Rabbi Reese?
There's no words that I can add to this amazing description.
So you agree?
I agree 100%. But I want to say that when actually in Kabbalah, in Kabbalah and Kabbalistic tradition, that actually the ascent of the soul of the Holy Ari, when he took that nap, there's even like an explanation that his soul went up to the spiritual world of formation, which is above time, totally above time. And that explains, you know, the gaps. You know, it took him short time of experience in that spiritual world, but when he actually had to download it here to this world, which is called, in Kabbalah, we call this physical world the world of action, it would take there for so many years, because that spiritual world of formation is like really above time. I want to say something about the word Kabbalah.
Yeah.
You know, why this wisdom is called Kabbalah? We should know that this is relatively a new term, a new word associated and connected to that ancient wisdom of thousands of years. The name is only like 700 years old. And what's the source and root of this name, Kabbalah? Kabbalah is a Hebrew word which means reception, receiving. When Kabbalah was first revealed in Provence, Montpellier, southern France, approximately 770 years ago by a Kabbalist by the name of Rabbi Isaac the Blind.
770 years ago?
Yes.
Rabbi Isaac the Blind?
Yes.
In Provence?
In Provence, Montpellier, he crossed the border then to...
That was south of France.
That was southern France. He crossed the border to northern Spain, to the area called Catalonia, which is now very famous.
Oh, Catalonia wants to secede now. They want to make their own country.
Exactly.
That's Catalonia. Okay.
Exactly. That same Catalonia. And he went to the city of Girona in northern Catalonia. It's called Costa Brava. And there he opened the first school ever to teach publicly the secrets of the Kabbalah. Shortly after, in another part of Spain, a city called Guadalajara in Castilla, a Kabbalist by the name of Rabbi Moshe de Leon revealed the Zohar, the classical text of Kabbalah, written in the area of Tzat 2,000 years ago.
Whoa, this is a lot of information.
Yes.
I'm going to slow you down, Rabbi. You're like overflowing here. This is, you're listening to the Shmooze of the Rabbi and the CEO. I'm Rabbi David Vigler of Chabad Palm Beach Gardens, where you'll find traditional Jewish values for contemporary Jews just like you. My guest this morning in the studio is Rabbi Eyal Reese of the Tzfat Kabbalah Center, and he's talking about a section of the Kabbalah which is not very well known. And I'm intrigued by what you're talking about. You're saying that something happened 770 years ago?
Yes.
In Montpellier. In the south of France, where Rabbi Isaac the Blind opened a yeshiva in Catalonia, where he started teaching Kabbalah to the masses. This is before
not
the great...
Not the masses, but students and publicly, openly.
More than it was until then, because for thousands of years, the Kabbalah was a dark secret.
Not allowed to
Nobody was allowed to talk about it. This is the first time, 770 years ago, when the Kabbalah was revealed in a less guarded fashion.
Revealed.
And then you said there was another rabbi. Who was the other one?
Correct. There was Rabbi Moshe de Leon. But Rabbi Moshe de Leon in Castilla, in Guadalajara, in Spain, he actually lived in the same time of the Ramban, Nachmanides. And Nachmanides, Ramban, he was a student of the student of Rabbi Isaac the Blind, who we mentioned before. Rabbi Isaac
the Blind, two generations after Rabbi Isaac the Blind.
Correct. Rabbi Isaac the Blind had two famous students known as Rabbi Ezra and Rabbi Azril of Girona, and they were the scholars who actually passed on the secrets of Kabbalah, the wisdom of Kabbalah, to Nachmanides, the Ramban, who also lived like 700 years ago. However, what I want to say is at that time already, in few places in Spain, people started hearing about the Kabbalah. Later on, Northern Africa, Italy, Greek islands, Eretz Israel.
So this is long before the Spanish expulsion, correct?
Definitely.
Okay.
And what happened over those years before the Spanish expulsion was that people that actually heard for the first time of the Kabbalah, the text, the teaching, the methodology of understanding spiritual words, spiritual commentary to biblical text, the soul, secrets of the letters of the Hebrew Alphabet, they asked themselves and asked others and asked scholars and asked rabbis, is this for real? Is this really part of the oral Torah received at Mount Sinai? If this is so, guys, come on, tell us the truth. How come we never heard of it? Maybe this is some kind of a Neoplatonic philosophy you guys took from the Greeks, from the Muslims, from the Spanish people? this is part of the old rock and we never heard of it. Tell us the truth, rabbis. And the rabbis told the truth. They said, it's Kabbalah. That's when the name came into use. Kabbalah.
That was when the
we
name
have
came.
Received this wisdom.
We didn't make it up.
We didn't make it up. We received it from the elders, from the prophets.
Fascinating.
Fascinating. All the way back to from Moses at Mount Sinai.
So the name Kabbalah was a response to those who tried to say that the teachings of the secrets of the universe that the Jews were teaching 770 years ago, a response to those who accused us from stealing this from other cultures. They said it's Kabbalah. It's a tradition dating back down to Moses and Mount Sinai. That's where the name came from.
That's how they started to use the name. Mind you, we should add, the term Kabbalah, you know, is referring to spiritual, you know, reception of wisdom, is old. We find it in the Talmud.
Kabbalah b'yadeinu. It is a tradition in our
one
hands.
Way, but also in regard to prophecies, biblical prophets, you know, the words are called Kabbalah in the Talmud. So it's all about receiving, you know, wisdom, you know, godly wisdom, spiritual wisdom. So the term was in use, but in a different way. Now it's used in regard to that part of the oral Torah, which the time for it to be shared with the world and be available and accessible started then 770 years ago.
I'm sorry, Rabbi, you got a lot to talk about. I got a lot of questions as soon as you're ready. Rabbi Reese, are you ready? If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Shmooze of the Rabbi and the CEO. Mitch Zachary is the CEO of Zachary Financial Consultants. I'm Rabbi David Vigler of Chabad of Palm Beach Gardens. Our guest this morning in the studio, Rabbi Eyal Reese of the Tzfat Kabbalah Center. Rabbi Reese is telling us that the name Kabbalah really came into circulation when a man by the name of Rabbi Isaac the Blind, 770 years ago, in the south of France, broke the ranks of the secrets of the Kabbalah. And he opened the yeshiva to teach Kabbalah to wider circles of people rather than the closely guarded secret that it was until that time. Why then, Rabbi Reese? Why then? Why did he decide to change this? And what can you tell us about Rabbi Isaac the Blind? What kind of name is that, Rabbi Isaac the Blind?
Well, he was blind. In Hebrew, we call him Rabbi Yitzchak Sagino. He was, in fact, a son of a very famous scholar, the Ravid.
He was the son of the Ravid?
The son of the Ravid.
Oh, the Ravid was a great Ravid commentary on Maimonides.
Maimonides. And by the way, we also know in the Kabbalistic tradition, a Hasidic also tradition, of course, that Maimonides himself was a Kabbalist.
Oh, yes.
Maimonides was a Kabbalist, but he lived right at the edge of the time when it was still...
Of the secrets.
Of the secrets. And therefore, he didn't fully reveal, you know, the secrets of Kabbalah, never claimed to be a Kabbalist, never shared the wisdom. However, we see in Yad HaChazakah, the halachic famous work of Maimonides, in the beginning, you know, what's called the Book of Knowledge, and he quotes actually from the Zohar. He actually quotes passages from
who
the
does?
Zohar. Maimonides.
Oh, of course, Maimonides, at the beginning of his works.
Yeah, at the beginning of his halachic works. You know.
Do you realize that the name Rabbi Isaac the Blind in Hebrew is not the blind? Rabbi Yitzchak Sagina Ho actually translates as Rabbi Isaac of the Abundant Light. So in Hebrew, it's used as an opposite. So, you know, sometimes you describe a blind person as having too much light, but maybe they meant it as a compliment to say Rabbi Isaac with the abundant light, who was able to teach the secrets of the Kabbalah. So what then, Rabbi Reese, was the reason
why
that 770 years ago, this rabbi decided to suddenly publicize the Kabbalah?
So that's it. He didn't just decide. Just like Maimonides knew that the time has not come yet in his time, Rabbi Isaac Blind knew that the time has come in his time for the revelation. Now, there's a macro answer and there's a micro specific answer. Micro. Well, you know, if we look at history, cultural, spiritual history, intellectual history of Europe of that time, especially Western Europe, we see a growth in philosophy. Spain, again, Italy, you know, Muslims, Christians, philosophy, philosophy, philosophy. So then the Jewish scholars actually, they could tell, you know, that this kind of philosophy, you know, foreign alien philosophy, you know, it's kind of dangerous to Jewish life. It's endangering it, you know. This is the time for the Kabbalah. Instead of just asking questions, philosophizing, does God exist? What's the human nature? Who are we? Let's teach everyone Kabbalah. How Kabbalah means how we have received the answers to those questions, how things really work. It's like manufacturer's guide. It's like God is telling you, this is how I make you. There's a soul to everything. There's a reason to everything. That's what Kabbalah teaches. This is like, let's say, you know what, from the micro, you know, situation then in Western Europe. But from a macro perspective, we learn...
Just one second. Before you go to the macro perspective, I want to make sure that I understood the way you explained the micro. Right. You're saying that 770 years ago, when the Kabbalah was starting to become disseminated in public circles, the reason for that was because Judaism faced the threat of the allure of other cultures, particularly the Muslim culture, which was very, very educated and learned culture, those countries where Maimonides and Spain, France, these were Muslim countries where our youth were drawn towards other cultures, and they felt that they needed to respond. This, the Jewish sages needed to give the Jewish youth something that they could sink their teeth into to feel proud and affiliate with their own Jewish identity instead of needing to search in other pastures. So what Maimonides did is that he wrote a book called The Guide to the Perplexed, Moreh Nevuchim, which is a very complicated work, and it was an attempt to inspire those whose faith is weak. But the Kabbalists soon realized that we have to unleash, we have to open the crown jewels in order to give the people the very essence of Jewish faith, of Jewish mysticism, to be able to inspire them to stay true to their core Jewish values and not need to be drawn towards the seduction of the world around them, whether it was in other cultures or the seduction of sin itself, which obviously was spreading as well. So that's a great reason why the Kabbalah was suddenly disseminated just about 770 years ago by Rabbi Isaac of the Great Light. But what about the macro reason?
The macro reason is the following. We got to understand a little bit of Hebrew. You know, in Hebrew language, there's no such thing as synonyms. On the contrary, the philosophy...
No words mean the same. No
exactly.
words.
Exactly. The philosophy and practicality of the grammar of our language, of this beautiful language called Hebrew or Lashon HaKodesh, is emphasizing actually the uniqueness of each word. And of course, every word is unique because every word is a composition of unique composition of letters, you know. And therefore, but... Every word in Hebrew, whether it's a noun, an adjective, a verb, is consisted of root letters. And these are the laws of our grammar and philosophy, again, and wisdom, that if you find different words altogether, yet they share the same root letters...
They're related.
They're related and they're connected.
So they're not synonyms. They don't mean the same thing.
No, of course not.
But they have an underlying connection.
Absolutely. And this is the case of the word Kabbalah, associated with the word Hakbalah in Hebrew, a word from the Torah, a very similar word. The root letters, the KBL sounds, the Kuf, Bet, Lamed, actually are even in the same order. So Hakbalah means parallels, symmetry. What's the analogy? The teachings of the Kabbalah are all based on models of parallels, symmetries, correspondence between physical and spiritual, body and soul, lights and vessels, as below, so above, microcosmos, microcosm, human godly, and so on and so forth. So, as such, Kabbalah explains the parallels also in the dimension of time between the 7 days of the week since the creation and the 7 millenniums of the age of the world. For example, we're now in the year 5778 from the creation. That's Jewish calendar, Jewish chronology. So therefore, we're in the last quarter, actually, of the 6th millennium. So from that macro perspective, actually, we look at, you know, the calendar, the years chronologically, and we realize that the time that Rabbi Isaac the Blind started teachings, revealing the secrets of Kabbalah, was right at the beginning of the 6th millennium in the year 5000.
Right now, we are in the year 5778 since creation.
Yeah.
According to this calculation, 770 years ago was exactly the beginning of the 6th millennium.
Mm-hmm.
That was exactly when Rabbi Isaac the of the Great Light, Rabbi Isaac the Blind, started to teach the Kabbalah. So what happened in the year 5000?
Okay, so in that case, if you look at things like cosmologically or for like the macro I suggested before, we realize that the year 5000 marks the beginning of the 6th millennium, which is parallel to the beginning of the 6th day of the week. Now, just imagine, I'm sure our listeners can conceptualize and understand it very simply. You know, we wake up Friday morning. As a Jew, what do you think of? Shabbat that's coming. What about the challahs? What about the bread? What about the drinks? What about the clothing? What about the children? What about the guests? What about, you know, I have to finish work. I have to do this. I have to do that. Shabbat is coming, you know. So Friday morning, the beginning of the Friday of the 6th day is all about the direction, preparation, spiritual preparation for Shabbat. And the same thing is with the Kabbalah. The revelation was then beginning of the 6th millennium to prepare the minds of people for what's called the 7th millennium, the end of the 6th millennium. Revelation of godliness, understanding godly mechanism, what's behind, what's a spiritual, soulful wisdom, explaining, teaching the inner dimension of the world we're living in.
Fascinating. What a great answer. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to The Shmooze with the Rabbi and CEO, Mitch Zachary is the CEO. I'm Rabbi David Vigler of Chabad of Palm Beach Gardens. And our guest this morning in the studio, live in the studio, is Rabbi Eyal Reis of the Tzfat Kabbalah Center. And he's explaining a fascinating historical point of the Kabbalah. He's saying that the Kabbalah is the teachings of God, the secrets of the universe that were taught to Moses on Mount Sinai in closely guarded secrets for 2,500 years. 770 years ago, they started to become disseminated publicly by Rabbi Isaac the Blind in the area of France. Why that happened, explains Rabbi Reis, is because 770 years ago was the beginning of the sixth millennium since creation, the year 5000, which corresponds, parallels, the sixth day of the week, the sixth day of the week, which is the time when we start to prepare for Shabbat. How does that, how does the study of the Kabbalah relate to Shabbat?
Wow. Okay, for that we have to touch base with Tzfat. Shabbat is the soul of the week, you know? Sometimes people think, oh, wait a second, Shabbat is different. I do this, or I don't do that, or I go to synagogue.
As we're more.
Shabbat is the soul of the week, you know? It what gives you the light, the life, the spirituality, the meaningfulness for the rest of the 6 days. Like also in the dimension of space, you know, we find the number seven. You know, there's six corners, right, left, up, down, back and forth. Call it north, south, east and west, and up and down. And there's the seventh dimension, is the inner dimension. So Shabbat is therefore known as the soul of the week. Now, the soul of the week, when you think of the word soul, soul is something vibrant, moving, you know. Shabbat is not just like 24 hours, which is all the same. Kabbalah explains how in Shabbat, it's such a beautiful feeling, you know, when Shabbat comes in, it's like one frequency of divine light. And then the next morning, wow, it's a different thing. And then the Shabbat afternoon, it's all like a motion of spirituality, which is so beautiful.
Amazing. So you're saying that just like Shabbat is the soul of the week, you're saying that Kabbalah is the soul of the universe.
Exactly.
Tell us, Rabbi Reis, my guest this morning in the studio from Tzfat Kabbalah Center, if you had to describe, we spoke a lot about what the history of Kabbalah is. Tell us, what is Kabbalah? Can you tell us Kabbalah for dummies in three sentences or less? What is Kabbalah?
Okay, so I tell you, when people come to my center, you know, I come from all over the world, different languages again, English, and they ask me the kind of question, you know, like, Rabbi, do you have a book, Kabbalah for Dummies or something? No, I'm sorry. From the perspective of Kabbalah, there's no such thing as dummies. No such thing, you know. We all have the knowledge, you know, embedded inside of us, engraved inside of us. We're just there. Look, Kabbalah teaches you divine providence. What's divine providence? You know, sometimes we live life, you know, and this thing happened, the other thing happened, you know. Everything physical, mundane, has a reason, has a soul. Kabbalah teaches you to appreciate what's called divine providence. Relate to, you know what, the godly message behind things. Things don't just happen. You don't just respond to things. Oh, he said that, she said that, oh, I heard this. What is the reason? What is God trying to tell me? How do I refine myself? Refining the self, the character. If I heard something, saw something, you know, if I spoke to another person, maybe we can help together a third person. What's the best thing to do right now? How do I decide? How do I make decisions? Kabbalah is very practical. Kabbalah is part of the Torah and the Zohar. The classical text of Kabbalah we mentioned before teaches us that the word Torah means guideline. And the Torah, the wisdom of the Torah, is not just to remain, you know, in the yeshiva, in the study hall, in the synagogue. It's actually life. It's a soul of life. You bring this wisdom to day-to-day life. That's what's so beautiful about it.
Wow. So you're saying that the Kabbalah then is the secrets of life?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Fascinating stuff. So if you want to hear about the secrets of life, you can actually study the Kabbalah. It's available. Until 700 years ago, you'd have a problem. But nowadays, the secrets of life, as told by God to Moses on Mount Sinai and passed down 3,330 years all the way down to us, to our Kabbalah teachers, you'll be able to learn about the secrets of life. Rabbi Reis is my guest this morning in the studio from the Tzfat Kabbalah Center. Tell me, Rabbi Reis, what is your favorite Kabbalistic teaching? Something that inspires you personally, that talks to you.
Wow. Okay, so I'll tell you my deepest secrets, personal secrets. Don't tell anyone.
I won't tell anybody. Just our listeners.
There's one book which inspires me more than, honestly, personally. I mean, I love all types of study, you know, and all types of books of Kabbalah. All, you know, there are three major paradigms of Kabbalah. There's a Kabbalist of Tzfat, there's medieval, there's current, there's Hasidic, there's all ways, all type of, you know, the Zohar, and even from before the Zohar, Sefer Yetzirah, the book of creation, attributed to the patriarch Abraham, Sefer Abahir, Sefer Yetzirah. These are ancient texts, even from before the Zohar, thousands of years old.
So there's all sorts of Kabbalistic texts, okay?
And what is the one that I like the most? And the one that I teach also. And by the way, I want to mention, I personally also teach online. Meaning all of the technology that we have nowadays, I teach on Skype or Zoom or whatever, you know, groups, individuals, different languages, other scholars in our center.
Video conferencing?
Video conferencing. It's all available. The availability is through media, is through meetings, is through right. Take a plane and come to Tzfat and this and that. Now you ask me about the text. I am moved by Tanya. Tanya, Hasidic philosophy, is the most current paradigm of the Kabbalah. In fact, some of the greatest Rebbeim, Hasidic masters, have called the Hasidic philosophy, they titled it, the soul of the Kabbalah.
The Book of Tanya.
For example, the Tanya, yes.
So you're saying the Book of Tanya is the soul of the Kabbalah?
Absolutely, 100%.
So it's the soul of the soul, because the Kabbalah is the soul of the universe.
Absolutely, and the term soul, we should know neshama in Hebrew. How the Zohar refers to the term neshama. Neshama means inner dimension. Everything is an inner dimension, and another layer, and another layer. Tanya, the teachings of the Tanya enable a person who just opened the text, even for the first time, to get in touch with himself, with his soul, with his, the godliness which is inside of him, with the wisdom. It's like touching breath with your spiritual DNA. And also teaching guidelines, you know, how to apply it in day-to-day life.
You know, I like your analogy of mentioning the spiritual DNA. Just to explain to our listeners what this means, that the Kabbalah is the soul of the universe. You see, just like when you build a house, you need to have plans. You need to have architectural plans, electrical plans, engineering plans, plumbing plans. And it's based upon these plans that the house is able to come to life. So the vision of the builder, the plans of the builder, is what is considered the soul of the house. Would you not agree that the Kabbalah is the soul of the universe in the sense that creation came about?
Absolutely, yes. But you know, like, I give you an analogy. You know, when Tzfat is a beautiful city and very spiritual, it's, you know, wow. People come over, they appreciate, they sense something special, unique. You know, there's a reason why all the Kabbalist prophets were drawn to Tzfat from four corners of the world, even from before the expulsion from Spain, before, after, up until these very days. I mentioned art before. Imagine a picture, you know, and you're looking at a piece of art and you say, wow, it's beautiful. And you come closer, you see the details, you understand, of course, what takes you, you know, but wait a second, there's a little plaque. You start reading, what's there? What's the story behind it? So you read the story behind the details, behind the colors. Wow, the artist actually brought it like an idea. There's an inner dimension to the inner dimension. And later on, you start reading the biography of the artist himself. You see the artist himself in the picture. Not just what he had in mind, what he wished, or what he wanted to share, what he experienced. It's he himself. Same thing with the teachings of the Tanya. It's like you find godliness, meaningfulness, from its source and essence, and it speaks to you because you've got this essential godliness inside of you, and it awakens it. That's so beautiful.
Wow. So the study of a Kabbalah, thank you, Rabbi Reis, is Rabbi Reis of the Tzfat Kabbalah Center, our guest this morning in Shmuz Radio here, is explaining that the teachings of the Kabbalah are effectively the introduction, telling us about the artist. It's telling us about who created this world, getting to know the artist. That's a great analogy there. And I want to tell you, you know, from my personal perspective, my personal inspiration, is that what the Kabbalah does for me is that it makes, it allowed me to realize that the soul of, or that Judaism is about reaching a state of divine consciousness. You see, we live our lives running the rat race. We're trying to pay our bills and, you know, graduate from college and be accepted to college and football teams winning, losing, just running around, and it's relatively meaningless, whatever we're doing. You know, at the end of the day, you know what? So you came to work, you came home from work, you made, you know, look, I think meaningless might be a harsh word. You know what? Let me take that back. It's not meaningless, but some people struggle with finding purpose in running around and just paying their bills and surviving, you know, from one vacation to another vacation. But for me personally, what the Kabbalah has done for me is that it's opened my eyes to be able to find meaning and purpose in every single object, to find the godliness in every human being. And not only that, but even in every encounter. When I realize that any person who's talking to me, even if I initially might think that they're different to me, that I'm not interested in what they have to say, that I think they're talking nonsense, maybe. The Kabbalah tells us that nothing happens by mistake. There is a master to this universe, and every single detail, experience, and apparent mistake is really coordinated by the divine master plan. So therefore, I know that I don't become bored or depressed, because I constantly recognize that there's a meaning, there's a purpose, there's a mission that I'm supposed to fulfill, and I'm constantly trying to work out how my next encounter, my next conversation, my next experience is actually part of my mission here in this world. So for me, I find myself vacillating between the challenges of life, the way they present themselves to me, you know, when life gives you curveballs, when life gives you things to worry about, to fret about, worries, fears, and anxieties. And I need to calibrate that with the foundation of my faith, which is allowing myself to have a constant state of divine consciousness, constantly remaining focused and remembering how everything is for a specific purpose. And that's something which the Kabbalah does for me, allowing me to find the godliness, the spirituality within every single experience and encounter. What do you think of that, Rabbi Reis?
I think if this is how you experience things, then I'm sure the people of your community of the Chabad House in Palm Beach Gardens are very fortunate to have you next to them. Because this is what it's really all about. It's about living it, you know. It's not a, profession, Kabbalah, you know. It's something you internalize, you feel, you connect, and people see it, you know, like you were saying before, abundant light, you know, when a person is studying it, you know, he's different, you know, he sees things differently, he acts differently, he speaks differently, and people around him benefit from it.
To me, the study of Kabbalah is like eating breakfast. You know, you can't say that I ate breakfast 4.5 months ago and therefore I'm good to go until next year. To me, it's like breathing. When I wake up in the morning, I need the study of the Kabbalah in order to remain focused and to brace myself for the challenges that I'm going to experience today, to make sure that I'm focused, that I'm balanced, that I'm in a state of equilibrium, and that I can absorb the blows in the way that they're meant to be taken, instead of them, God forbid, knocking me out of whack.
But Rabbi, yes, but maybe for the listeners, we should emphasize that it's not just for you as a rabbi who faces all types of spiritual challenges perhaps in your life, you know, is what Kabbalah for. No, it's for every person, every human. While in the past, and you asked me about how it used to be decades and centuries ago, you know, it was just an elite group of scholars who preserved actually the wisdom. Nowadays, it's available to all. Let me mention something very important about education, you know. It's really for kids, you know. A child, you know, when do you wait? You know, but some people think, oh, Kabbalah is only when I grow. I thought it's only you start at 40. Wrong, it's not true. Those teachings of the inner dimension of the Kabbalah, of Hasidic philosophy and everything, it's of course it's for kids. You know, you want kids to be exposed to spiritual teachings, you know, moral values, spirituality, godliness, you know. Look at kids nowadays and education in general, you know, people are exposed to all kinds of wisdoms through the internet, through a few buttons here and publications there, and who knows what, all kinds of information is running. Stop for a second. Also, there's, God bless, availability of sense, of meaningfulness, of spirituality. And you don't wait till 40 or 30 or 20. You start with your kids at home.
Absolutely. We absolutely raise our children in that perspective, where what we do is that we teach our children that the purpose of us being born, the purpose of us entering this world from the youngest age, is because there are every physical space that we come to in this world, and every physical food or drink or object that we encounter is there waiting for us to illuminate it. A lot like Michelangelo, who would speak about the sculptures that he made. He would say that he doesn't make sculptures out of nothing. He says the sculptures are already there. They're just trapped in the stone, and he has to redeem them from their imprisonment in the stone. That's from Michelangelo. We tell our kids that, and this is straight from the Kabbalah, that everything in the universe has got godly sparks inside of it, in the apple that you're craving right now, in the golf course that you're about to go on the cruise that you're about to take. There are godly sparks that are waiting to be liberated, and they can only be liberated when you, yours truly, goes there and experiences a mitzvah, a godly connection, a godly act at that spot. So when you make a blessing on the apple, when you light the Shabbat candles on that cruise, when you study a little, share a little tidbit of Torah with your buddy on the golf course, then what you're doing is that you're illuminating that spot with godly light. And our kids are so excited. You know, when we get stuck in an airport, God forbid, they'll tell me, Tati, this is in order for us to light up the sparks. Let's go buy a drink so we can make a blessing. Let's say a verse. I remember taking my kids up on top of Table Mountain in Cape Town, South Africa. Up on top of the mountain, it was amazing. You know, it was a big misty cloud on top. They call it the tablecloth. And out there, we had to recite special Torah verses because we needed to redeem the sparks, to illuminate the godly sparks. And to us, that's a very, very inspirational, purposeful way of living, that the kids can know that nothing is random, nothing is coincidental. Every action of theirs is important and observed by God up in heaven. As we start to wrap it up here, Rabbi Reese is our guest this morning in the studio from the Tzfat Kabbalah Center, the city of Tzfat. Rabbi Reese, you've opened your Tzfat Kabbalah Center to be able to allow all peoples, Jews and non-Jews, men and women of all race, colors, and creeds and religions, to come and experience the Kabbalah for as long or as short as they wish in the city of the Kabbalah. Tell me, what are some of your favorite seminars? Just the titles. What could somebody expect when they walk into the Tzfat Kabbalah seminar?
So every program that we run, whether it's a day long or a few days long or whatever seminar and so on, we call it the Kabbalah retreat. So by the way, sometimes people come to us, you know, from all over the world. They don't just do an Israel tour or a Middle Eastern tour. They come just to Tzfat to immerse themselves in this. It's like a spiritual getaway that we all need from time to time. However, so our programs include like studying, you know, ancient texts, you know, 16th century Kabbalah, Zohar, Hasidic philosophy, Tanya, and so on. This is the studies. But we do all kinds of programs like meditation with Kabbalistic music, Hasidic melodies, deep art and Kabbalah workshops. We have programs, you know, for women. It's called a spa for the feminine soul. This is brilliant. You know, we have groups of women that come to these kind of programs. We do walking tours. Walking tours. We call it Kabbalah Tour. It's a brand, actually. Kabbalah Tour in the old city of Tzfat, in the sites where the Kabbalists learned and this and that, and we study there. There's also a program that we do, which is done in nature altogether. You know, we go to what's called the power sites. These are the ancient tombs of the sages of the Kabbalists going back.
Power sites. Nice, I like that.
Yeah, powerful. It's very powerful.
We're going to try that one day.
Absolutely. I'm telling you, it's transformative. What people describe, what they experience in those sites, we're talking about 2,000 years old caves of the Kabbalists. You know, the cave of Abaya in Rava, the cave of Rava Mnuna, the tomb of Benayahu ben Yoyada, a Kabbalist from 3,000 years ago, a biblical figure. Amuka, the Valley of Love, you pray to find your soulmate.
The
Meron.
Valley of Love.
Wow. So this is something that invite every human on planet Earth, you know, to come and experience it once in a lifetime.
Rabbi Reese, we're trying to encapsulate 3,330 years of Kabbalah into 30 minutes of Shmooze Radio. Quite an ambitious feat to reach, but I hope that we've been able to give our listeners a taste of the Kabbalah, to be able to experience a thirst of this incredible wisdom, which is available to you. It's available. You can find it in the Tzfat Kabbalah Center. You can find it in any Chabad house in the world. You can find it online at Chabad.org. It's available. It's out there. You've just got to reach out to that apple and pick it off the tree. You can find a Kabbalah teacher near you at any Chabad center. We're here in Palm Beach Gardens. You can find us online at georgegardens.com. That's www.georgegardens.com. You can always send me an email with your questions or comments at rabbi@georgegardens.com. That's rabbi@georgegardens.com. And you can always visit the Tzfat Kabbalah Center in Tzfat. On your next tour, make yourself a Kabbalah tour. Make it a tour to the Valley of Love. I love this concept. And Rabbi Reese, we are planning to come visit you, God willing. Pretty soon, God willing, we're going to have a nice trip out there to Tzfat. We'll have a real special experience over there. We'll tell the community all about it. But I just want to thank you for joining us here this morning on the Shmooze Radio, talking about your passion and your life's experience, which is devoted to the Kabbalah and to sharing it with all those thousands and thousands of tourists that are coming to the city of the Kabbalah, the city of Tzfat. If you can please give us a closing comment.
My closing comment is that, guys, I'm available. You can find us also on www.tzfatkabbalah.org or kabbalatour.com, or just Google us and we're available.
Kabbalatours.com?
Kabbalatour.com. Tzfatkabbalah.org, kabbalahretreats.com. We have many websites. However, we are available. I mean, my staff, the people I work with, you know, they're all as passionate as I am. We work in many different languages. We host everyone. Please pay us a visit. We're there.
Thank you very much. And you remind me, you know, that the Kabbalah tells us that more than the calf wishes to drink, the cow wishes to nurse. So more than the student wishes to learn, the teacher wants to teach. Because when you're exposed to this kind of wisdom, the first thing that happens is that you're just overflowing and you just want to share it. So find yourself a Kabbalah teacher, find yourself a Chabad rabbi near or close, Rabbi Yael Reese and Tzfat Kabbalah Center, and be inspired. It's going to be an incredible experience. Thank you, Rabbi Reese. Thank you for joining us here this morning. Shalom.
Shalom.
And make it a wonderful week.
Thank you.
The following segment was aired previously on Schmooze Radio.
Anyways, this is the story. You're listening to the Schmooze with the rabbi and the CEO on the line, live from Jerusalem, is our illustrious guest. Alan Hoffman is the CEO and Director General of the Jewish Agency. Good morning, Alan Hoffman. Welcome to the Schmooze.
Good morning. It's great to be with you, and mazel tov to your three-year-old on his
thank you.
On his simcha.
Thank you. We are, you know, you're with the Jewish Agency, and you're caring for Jewish issues around the world. I want you to know that our family is taking care of replenishing the numbers after the Holocaust. This is number 8. You know, 1 + 1 = 8 in our family. No, sorry, it's number 7. I'm sorry, number 8 is coming next month.
Right.
Sorry.
He was number 7.
So we're working on pumping up the numbers there, Mr. Hoffman, to make sure that there's a lot of Jews in the world. Thank you very, very much. We actually had a special employee, a worker of yours, a couple weeks ago at the Chabad, Palm Beach Gardens. There was Ariel DiPorto. She's the lady who's in charge of the Aliyah rescue missions, as well as the voluntary Aliyah from very many countries around the world. And that was a fascinating guest that we have for Shabbos. I want to thank you for having sent her and partnered with her for that wonderful event. Alan, if you could please tell us, what is the Jewish Agency, and what is it that you do for the Jews around the world?
So the So the Jewish Agency for Israel, which is going to be 90 years old in this coming August, gave birth to the State of Israel. No more, no less. I'm not sure that all your listeners know, but in 1917, after the First World War, the Jewish Agency was created to be the arm of the Zionist movement, the political arm, to actually make sure that a state got created. And David Ben-Gurion was the head of the Jewish Agency for 13 years, from 1935 to 1948. And in this building in which I'm sitting at the moment, here in Jerusalem, the decision was made to go ahead and declare a state, and Ben-Gurion became the first head of the state and transition from the Jewish Agency. Today, Natan Sharansky is our chairman of the executive, sitting in the same office that Ben-Gurion did. Once the state was created, one of the major issues that the Jewish Agency dealt with was to make sure that Jews, refugees, many of them displaced people after the Holocaust, would be able to come and live in Israel. And since that time, we have brought 4 million Jews to live in the State of Israel. The State of Israel today has 6.4 million Jews. The Jewish Agency has brought 4 million Jews since that time.
Wow, that's incredible.
And that's been our historic mission. More recently, we deal with Jewish education around the world as well.
So, Alan, that's amazing. Just to summarize, it seems like once the State of Israel was founded, the Jewish Agency moved on to engage with Jews in the diaspora, making sure that they feel connected to Israel and actually bringing them to Israel. It seems like you brought 75% of the Jews in Israel to Israel. So it seems like quite an incredible achievement. Quick question for you, Alan. Do you engage with foreign governments as well?
So I think it's a great question, Rabbi Vigler. As you can imagine, when the state was created, it was impossible for a sovereign state to go into other people's countries and pluck people out to be immigrants. And so the Jewish Agency has acted on behalf of the Jewish people as the intermediary between Israel and many, many foreign governments, sometimes hostile governments, sometimes friendly governments. But we have a lot of relationships with governments around the world, particularly around what is happening to their Jewish communities. We've been very involved in France, very involved in Russia, in the Ukraine in recent years. And we have a presence in many countries throughout the world.
The reason I'm asking you specifically, Alan, is because of a personal perspective. I myself am South African. And my family, my parents,
I can hear Rabbi Vigler, and I hope you can recognize my South African accent.
Yes, exactly. I was going to say either English or South African. So, as a fellow, South African, I'd like to ask you this question. You know, Cape Town, as you know, as you surely know, is in water crisis. It's the first modern city in the world, which is apparently running out of water for I mean, to the point that people will have to stand in line for a minuscule amount of water per person. This is starting any day now. They're talking, I think, in March or late February when day zero kicks in. My sister, my brother-in-law, my nephews live in Cape Town where they run a very two very successful schools, an elementary, a preschool, as well as a high school, of course, Jewish schools. And, of course, the only country in the world which knows how to transform seawater into drinking water is Israel. What can you comment for us about why Israel is not partnering with South Africa to take the city, which is surrounded by sea on three sides, to give them water? Do you have any comments?
Rabbi Z, let me say three things. Number one, I hear your South African accent coming out while you speak to me.
Baruch Hashem.
And I'm sure your listeners are aware of it as well. Number two,
he's our African American rabbi.
Last night, there was a huge downfall of rain in Cape Town. The heavens opened up, and I understand Gishmei Bracha, rains of blessed rains, and I understand that that the crisis is now, as of today, been put off by a couple of weeks because of the huge rainfall.
That is incredible. I didn't know that.
Number three, I think you're absolutely right. Israel does have the technology, and we've done a pretty amazing job in desalination of water and developing desalination plants. But I think that, as you know, the current South African government has not been particularly sympathetic to Israel. And I think I have little doubt that if the South African government would turn to Israel, that we would be very ready to help and to provide our expertise in helping a country like South Africa, as you say, has sea on all sides, to be able to benefit from desalination.
It's unbelievable because, if I'm not mistaken, South Africa is the only country to have actually diplomatic ties with Hamas. And for the realization, you of course confirm, that South Africa is literally snubbing her nose at the state of Israel. She would rather bring her largest city to the point of water deprivation rather than recognize the state of Israel. This seems to be the worst result of the BDS movement, the Boycott, Divest, and Sanction movement. Is this correct?
I think that it's very sad and unfortunate that there were years, as you know very well, in which there were very strong relationships between South Africa and Israel, not only because of the incredible Zionist community that lives in South Africa, but also because there were very strong common interests between the South African government and the Israeli government. And I think it's sad that under the current administration, they're not able to take advantage of what Israel can offer.
Amazing. Well, thank you for sharing those thoughts, Alan.
Ms. Hoffman, I'd like to ask you, this is Mitch Zachary, the CEO. I'd just like to ask you, what is some of the biggest problems that you face right now as head of the agency?
So I should say, number one, that Natan Sharansky is the head of the agency.
Right, I mean, you're the CEO.
I am the CEO, right. I would say that in some ways, I think we share... without knowing you well, I think we share the same biggest problems, which is that when the State of Israel was created, when the Jewish Agency was founded 90 years ago and the State of Israel was created 70 years ago, we had an incredibly strong Jewish people that was giving birth to this fledgling country. Today, 70 years later, I think we're facing throughout the Jewish world, including the United States, but not only the United States, we're facing a situation in which the Jewish people is disappearing, and in which the connection to Israel, which is one of the very strong bonds for keeping young Jews connected, is still not enough to deal with part of the evaporation of the Jewish people. And I think the battle in which we all are together engaged is how to continue to make sure that young Jews remain connected to their people, to their religion, and to their land. And I think that the kind of work that you're doing and the kind of work that we're doing, it's all part of the same battle.
And what about the birthright movement? How do you believe, that should be expanded? I mean, do you think that's an answer?
We're partners in Birthright, and we're very proud to be partners. And we actually created a program called Masa, in which means journey, in which close to 13,000 young Jews come to Israel, not for 10 days, but for between a semester and a year. And I have no doubt that for many, many young people, visiting Israel is a way, a trigger to turn them on to Jewish life. But a trigger is only a trigger, and one has to find a way to sustain it. So for those people who come on Aliyah, and we have about 30,000 Jews come to Israel every year, even today, for those who come to Aliyah, it's going to be much easier to remain Jewish. For those people who are living throughout the Jewish world, we have to find ways to build on the platforms of Birthright and similar kind of programs, Masa, in order to build a strong and lifelong connection to the Jewish people.
That's incredible. You know, there was recently an article, Alan Hoffman. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the Shmooz with the Rabbi and the CEO. I'm Rabbi David Vigler of Chabad Palm Beach Gardens, where you'll find traditional Jewish values for contemporary Jews just like you. Learn about us online at jewishgardens.com. That's www.jewishgardens.com. My co-host is Mitch Zachary, the CEO of Zachary Financial Consultants. And this morning, we have the great pleasure of having the illustrious guest, the CEO and Director General of the Jewish Agency. It's Alan Hoffman, who is talking to us about the work of the Jewish Agency in the diaspora around the world. Alan, there was recently an article published in Haaretz newspaper, which speaks about the disenfranchisement of young American Jews from the state of Israel. These are young American Jews which seem to put their American values before their Jewish values, their principles of democracy and liberalism and pluralism before their commitment to their Jewish identity. Could you comment a little bit more about this?
So I don't think that that these two things are necessarily in conflict. I think that it should be possible to be a good American and a good Jew, and I think in many ways the values, the democratic values on which the United States of America was created are very, very similar to the same values on which the State of Israel was created, and I think these two societies are both democratic beacons in the world today. Having said that, I think that it is unfortunate that there are Jews who choose to feel that they need to choose between liberal values and Israel. And I think that there's a fundamental misunderstanding, particularly today, this very day, in which Israel shot down last night an Iranian drone. And one of our F-16 planes was shot down by the Syrians. And where Israel is a bulwark against Hezbollah and Islamic radicalism, it seems to me that were I a young American Jew, I think that I would understand that Israel is not only a Jewish homeland, but is also a hugely important stronghold for democracy in the Middle East.
You know, it's just so frustrating that Israel is doing everything she can to survive. She's trying to stop people that are literally trying to kill themselves from hurting others. And, you know, when you do that, there's going to be some collateral damage. We know that happens here in America, too. But unfortunately, there's this element of the young American Jews that are choosing or are trying to choose between their liberal political positions and using that as a wedge between their Jewish identity. And I wanted to just tell you something very, very important. Alan and Mitch here, just as part of this conversation, is that people often ask me as a Chabad rabbi, "Rabbi, if you care so much about Israel, why don't you go live in Israel? Right? If you're so Jewish, you should be living in Israel." And the answer that I give them is the answer that the Rebbe answered, our Rebbe, the Chabad Lubavitch Rebbe, Rabbi Schneerson, gave when he was asked the same question on uncountable occasions. And the answer was, "My job is to make Israel here." In other words, for me to go to Israel, I'd just be another guy in Israel. But if I'm here, I'm able to be an embassy for the holiness, the spirituality, the Judaism of Israel, and I'm able to connect with all of those Jews out there that are, you know, that are lost and wandering. You know, we speak about the four sons at the Passover Seder: the wise, the wicked, the one who's innocent, and the one who doesn't even know how to ask. There's a fifth son at the Seder who's not even at the Seder, the one who doesn't even know that it's Passover. And that's the job of the Chabad houses around the world, to make sure not only that the four sons are taken care of, but that even the fifth son is taken care of. I feel that our role, Alan, is to connect directly with the problem that you're describing here about the disenfranchised young American Jews that feel more strongly about their politics than they do about their Jewish identity, by us engaging them in the Chabad house, whether it's in Thailand or in you know, right here in the United States of America, whether it's in the Far East or it's just on our shores. Our job is to make sure that the Israeli backpacker, the young American college student, the every single kind of Jew has got a place to be able to study, because we feel that the only thing that connects us as Jewish people is our Torah. It's not our shared language, because we don't have a shared language. It's not our shared history, because we don't have a shared history. It's just our Torah that connects us. And when we are able to plug a young American Jew into Torah, we find that their connection to Israel automatically emerges. How do you feel about that position, Alan?
So, Rabbi, I've seen Chabad's work all over the world. We work with Chabad in the former Soviet Union. I myself have been trekking in Nepal and have been a Shabbat guest at a Chabad house in
Kathmandu.
In Nepal, in Kathmandu, and in other places in the world. And Chabad does an amazing job. I don't think that I'm a person who's qualified to decide which mitzvah is more important. I think the mitzvah of Yishuv Haaretz, the settlement of the land of Israel, mitzvah that's given to us in the Bible, is one of the most important mitzvahs in the entire Torah. And I think, on the other hand, the mitzvah of keeping young Jews connected to the Jewish people is yet another important mitzvah. So people who are involved in both of these activities are, to me, at the top of the pyramid of Jewish life.
Well, thank you.
Mr. Hoffman, I want to thank you so much for your time. Before we finish, can you please tell our listeners where they could go to help and what they could do to help your agency in its continued success?
So we're funded by the federations of North America, and your local federation is certainly one of the ways for you to help us. Our rescue work that we do around the world comes from gifts that are made to your local federation. You can also go into the Jewish Agency website and see the work of the Jewish Agency, and I think that in the website you'll also find ways to be able to help our work.
Well, thank you, Mr. Alan Hoffman, CEO and Director General of the Jewish Agency, speaking to us live on Shmooze Radio. We want to thank you for your efforts in making sure that no Jew is left behind. I feel that ties in directly with what we're doing at the Chabads around the world, what you're doing from a nationalistic perspective, we're doing from a religious and spiritual perspective, and we all got to work together to make sure that none of our brothers and sisters are left behind, that every single Jew knows that we care for you as you listen to this radio show, as you don't have a rabbi, as you don't have a synagogue affiliation, as you think that the Jewish people have forgotten about you, God forbid. I want you to know, share this message with your Jewish neighbor. Tell him that the Jewish Agency cares about him. Tell him that the Rebbe cares about him, that the Chabad Lubavitch around the world cares about him. All you need to do is just reach out and connect. We want you. We want to bring you home. We want to take care of you spiritually, take care of you nationalistically, and make sure that every single Jew is accounted for. Of course, the culmination of this dream will be the imminent redemption, the coming of the Mashiach, when the biblical prophets tell us about how we all will be carried to the land of Israel upon the wings of eagles. Of course, today we can understand that prophecy to mean Boeing 747s, El Al jets, the wings of eagles, as described by the ancient prophets. And God willing, we all will be united soon in a safe and secure land of Israel. Thank you, Alan. We really, really appreciate your time with us here this morning on Shmooze Radio.
Amen. Thank you very much for having me, and Tutsits.
Tot Sins, that's right, in our native Afrikaans, Yasha Koach, and from strength to strength. Friends, we'll be right back with some very exciting conversation here on Shmooze Radio. We've got another very exciting guest. It's one of the most celebrated Jewish comedians on the circuit today. If you haven't heard this guy, then you're hiding under a rock. Let me tell you, Elon Gold is just phenomenally funny. This guy is hysterical. He performed before 18,000 people last year in Washington, D.C. When we met him, of course, we had seen him already many times before on YouTube. And this guy is coming to Palm Beach Gardens next Sunday night for the Chabad of Palm Beach Gardens Gala Cocktail Dinner. You got to be there. You don't want to miss this out. You can find out more information at www.jewishgardens.com. That's www.jewishgardens.com/gala, where you can join us for the evening of celebration of the Chabad of Palm Beach Gardens with our headline comedian, Elon Gold. He'll be right with us in just a few moments. Don't go away.